Hello and welcome to Kicking Tires. My name is Jimmy.
And I'm Justin.
And today is March 31st. It's a Thursday, not the Wednesday as we usually do, because there was one very, very exciting news that we wanted to wait for to share with everyone. But we'll get to that at the end. You got to stay all the way through. But there are some exciting things today that we are going to go through. So let's hit off with Lotus. Lotus brought out a brand new electric SUV. They dubbed it the Hyper SUV. It's called the Electra, I think. Is it Electra?
Electra with no C.
Yeah.
Automakers,
stop making your car name so weird. Like, I can't pronounce
like
any of it.
That's such an obstacle, I feel like. And like different markets are going to have like a harder time with certain names than others.
Yeah.
But this one, from an English speaking manufacturer to an English speaking customer base like us, we're confused.
But what we're not confused is, I think this is the only way that Lotus can survive.
They can't make that many Emiras, really, too. Yeah. They can't be basing their whole company around those supercars
sports cars. Yeah, this is something that they have to start selling in order for them to be around for the next bit. I mean, Porsche did that with the Cayenne and the Macan, right? In order for Porsche to exist now, those cars, well, had to be developed.
Nothing wrong with them either.
They're actually pretty good cars.
They were always good, but people weren't willing to accept it. And I see some hesitation, especially coming from Lotus, being one electric to an SUV. Some people are losing it, right? Like, this is everything that Lotus doesn't stand for. And some people are losing it. The superiority of the brand. And this is exactly what they said about the Cayenne. When it came out 20 years ago. Yeah.
So they say the power output starts at 600 horsepower. Can't be more than that. There's an 800 volt battery, 100 kilowatt hour capacity, which is pretty common. You can get 350 kilowatt DC fast charge, which means in 20 minutes, about 400 kilometers. So it's pretty good fast charge. Targeted range, 600 kilometers. So it should be more than sufficient. And they're also targeting a 0-60 time in less than 3 seconds. So they want to be in that 2 second club, like the Tesla Model Y Plaid.
Model X Plaid.
Oh, yes, X. Sorry, I said Y. But it is going to be built in Wuhan, China, and it's going to be coming in 2024.
Like, it's pretty soon.
Yeah. Like, it's very soon. You might have seen this car on like YouTube. There's a bunch of videos.
Yeah, every channel covered it.
And yeah.
It's an interesting strategy when manufacturers do these embargoes, because I'm like, on my feed, I got like 8 or 9 videos of this car. And I'm like, I'm not going to watch any of them because it's just too many. If it was one person covering it at one time, I wouldn't mind. But I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do.
You don't know who to choose neither, right?
Exactly.
So I did watch Car Wow, so Matt Watson's. When he went around with his stick of truth, he did show that like basically all the vents that's on the car, it's real. So like there's vents behind the door, there's vents on the front grill, the back end. And there's a really cool rear spoiler that's above the rear window that are like just little spoilers, so like just little pieces that's off to the edge. They don't connect in the middle. It's just super cool. Of course, it has my favorite piece of any automotive, like rear end LED light bar, because it just looks absolutely
full width light bar. No, just, and it's just like the little horns on the roof. It's a really nice execution compared to like the BMW XM. or anything. Like, a lot of cars go for some kind of roof spoiler thing. This one is funky and it still pulls it off because it's got an aggressive enough look, and it's a unique enough look that it doesn't just scream EV, mm-hmm. right? And that's the problem I find with the Tesla lineup, and not just Tesla, but a lot of EV manufacturers, is just very smooth, boring shapes. This one is, I don't know, it looks like a Urus, but smoothed out.
Yeah.
In a good way, in a good way. It looks better than Urus, in my opinion.
Okay, this might be kind of bad to say. I don't think the Urus is pretty in any way, shape, or form. I don't like it.
It's pretty tacky. Like, it's easily the ugliest car they make. This is very nice.
Like, yeah. The inside is also really nice. Like, I'm a big fan of, like, just styled up interiors. You can see by the materials that they have, it's very, very plush on the inside. No pricing information, so we don't know exactly how much this thing's going to cost, but I'm thinking at least 100K.
Mm. And it's got, right? The gold accents all in their press photos for the Chinese demographic. The gold to me is a little bit chintzy. I think I get the sense that the color may fade. And it's on the doors, it's on the tweeter surround, it's on the steering wheel buttons. I think there's a little bit too much gold going on for my liking. It looks decent in the press photos, I will say.
Yeah.
But how will that hold up? I don't know. Like, I've just bought too many like shiny Chinese things that don't stay shiny.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a Lotus, right? They're known for their reliability.
Their build quality. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see how this kind of pans out for them. But
I love that you can see the tire through all those vents. Like, the vents are huge on this thing, which is, I mean, I'm sure it's wind tunnel tested. It's an EV. Yeah. But I don't know if manufacturers really consider how dirty it makes a car. No, especially if it's an SUV that you're going to use every day.
No one cares about that.
Yeah, because like the GR86 has functional front fender vents, and it just flings so much dirt through that vent on the front, behind the front tire. Yeah.
Yeah.
These are way bigger.
I think if this is successful, it will bring new life to Lotus. I mean, we won't be able, like, we're not going to be waiting like 15, 20 years for a new car from them.
Yeah.
I think, and that's what's going to help them.
And what's also really nice is that I think it will raise, we don't know how it drives, but I think it will raise the bar or set a standard for how an EV SUV sporty handles. One should handle.
Yeah,
because right now, an EV SUV, we don't have that many choices. Like, if you want something sportier, the Model X, but like, it's okay.
It's fast in a straight line, but it doesn't really handle.
No, I think all the Teslas drive reasonably well. Because after driving like the Mach-E, driving the Ioniq, ID4, like, these are very much cruisery. Mm-hmm. Type vehicles. The Teslas are, I think they're geared more towards the people that traditionally bought European cars over Japanese cars or domestic brands. This is just my opinion, but I think this is going to be something special as far as the suspension tuning and whatnot.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. Yeah. Let's move on from Lotus here. Let's go to Stellantis. Stellantis, if you don't know, it's Chrysler, Jeep, Fiat, a whole bunch of them. But they made a new engine, which is actually kind of interesting in today's day and age. This is their brand new Hurricane. It's a 3-liter twin turbo inline six. The first vehicle that's going to be using this is most likely their Grand Wagoneer. Not 100% confirmed, but information has been pointing that way. There are two different powertrain options for it. There's the standard output and high output. So the standard output is optimized more for fuel economy with 400 horsepower, but the high output, you get more performance at 500 horsepower. So the main point of this is you get that flat torque curve like most turbocharged engine does. And it's going to be replacing the very, very ancient Hemi V8. And I think it's going to be a good thing. But what they have said as well is there is going to be potential for integration with electrification. So mild hybrid or actual plug-in hybrids with this engine, that's going to be a performance changer. Like, it's going to be crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, definitely they're going to, their plug-in products are kind of exciting in a way.
Like the Pacifica?
Pacifica. I know you love that car.
I do.
Yeah, no, and inline six, like that's something to really emphasize. This is something they haven't done in a while. Inline six is the superior engine layout. I think it is kind of the best all-rounder. Everyone is known for their inline six that made one, like the Supra, the Skylines that were inline six.
Of BMW inline six.
A lot of BMW, the whole brand, inline six.
Yeah.
The Mercedes inline six diesels that ran for a million miles.
Yeah.
Yeah. They switched to V6 and it completely bombed. Like they used to be known for quality and reliability, and then they switched to V6 and right. Inline six packaging wise, not the easiest thing to work around, but definitely has some advantages.
Yeah. So the good news is it's going to be coming later this year. So we should see our first Hurricane-powered Stellantis product later this year. So 2022? I can't remember what year it is. But speaking of things that are exciting, Ford F-150. Okay, maybe not so much. So Ford dropped the Rattler. So Rattler is basically like the FX4, but a little bit more than that.
More styling.
Totally. A little bit more styling. It tacks onto the base XL trims only. So think of it as like, you know, you just want an F-150 with a little bit of that off-road look. And you don't want to spend a lot. This is it.
Yeah. And nowadays, the XL trim is not even... Like, looking at this Rattler, it's not that base. Because XL was traditionally like steel wheels, plastic grill, looked really cheap.
Bench seat,
vinyl floors, the lot. And the Rattler brings it up. And I think I know why. It's that a lot of manufacturers are doing this now, and you'll see it more and more, is that they're just trying to maximize potential profit margin by adding a little trim package. It looks a little bit prettier, gets people spending money. I saw this with the RAV4 XSE. Is it called the SE trim RAV4?
That which, new special edition one.
The new quote unquote special edition. They slapped on the black wheels. You don't even get the black roof because that costs more to manufacture. They just slapped that on for like $1,500 more than the XLE. It's not worth it, but it is, because my friend wanted the XLE hybrid, but they're like, the dealership's like, get the SE, because even though it's not as good of a deal as an XLE, it's still a better deal buying this new rather than used, and you'll be earlier in line for this SE trim. So he ordered the SE, if I remember correctly.
Is the SE better or worse than the Highlander Bronze Edition?
It's better because the black is a safer choice than the bronze. The bronze is just... It looks like a cheap DIY job.
I don't know if I told you, I saw a Bronze Edition.
I saw one at Costco.
I was at Home Depot, and I was like,
oh, nice. Maybe the same one.
Yeah, maybe. So I was like, oh, someone plastic dipped the wheels. Yeah. No, this is the bronze, because I saw the inside. It had the bronze stripe. I was surprised. I really was. Yeah. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's just to maximize the profit margins. It's just another trim that you can get so that you can be like, oh, I have an F-150 that has this kind of thing.
Yeah, but I mean, legitimately, I looked at the interior pictures and I'm like, damn, this is a XL these days. And I was pretty impressed. I think maybe I just haven't looked at what an XL trim is, but in my mind, like my gen XL is like, I couldn't go that base. I went just one click up, which was the XLT, but this XL is as nice as the previous XLT.
Your XLT came with like a 3.5-inch screen.
4.5. 4-inch?
I don't know. It was tight.
It had a backup cam. That's all I cared about, because for my generation and XL, you couldn't even get a backup cam.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, for that first year, you couldn't get a backup cam, and you couldn't get... What was the deal breaker for me for the XL? I did want the bench seat, actually. I wouldn't mind the bench seat at all. But there was a few things that, like, it was a little bit too basic for XL. Yeah.
Well, something that's not basic, it's the next topic here. Mercedes AMG, the G63 Edition 55.
But the same marketing strategy is to give it a special edition, pump it up, right? Limit it to 55 units.
Yeah, so 55 units in the US, not sure about elsewhere in the world or even here in Canada, but it is a special edition. What's so special about it? I didn't bother to even read this entire article.
It's got decals, it's got wheels.
I honestly don't care enough about it to even, you know, give it the thought.
It's got very generic AMG forged wheels. That the problem with AMG is they use the same wheel and they size it up and down for different applications, different bolt patterns, but it's the same style. At least Audi does the same thing.
At least they didn't put monoblocks on this.
At least they didn't put monoblocks on it, because they needed 22s, show off the big brakes. Usually it's only the big front brakes too. The rear brakes are always kind of silly. it's nothing that special. And I think it is exactly the same strategy. It's just you make a sort of special edition that is really, if you knew nothing about it and you didn't read the badges, you wouldn't think anything of it.
No, like, it's really not anything that special.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a G63 Edition 55, which is very confusing, because those of us that grew up in the 2000s know the G55,
yeah the V8. Well, I mean, this is still a V8, but yeah, definitely very different. Speaking of very different, love these segues today. VinFast. If you don't know what VinFast is, it's not a way...
Great way to research a used car you're buying.
No, that's VinWiki. That's a little different. Very, very different. VinFast, it's a Vietnamese automaker that's been making a lot of cars in Vietnam, as well as scooters. But they're entering the US and Canadian market with the VF8 as well as the VF9. They spent a lot of money, actually, in the U.S. They put a brand new plant in North Carolina to build these two vehicles. So they're like miles ahead compared to like Faraday Future or Rivian. Rivian's about there as well. But like Canoo, for example, like those automakers, they only have like the one kind of test car. These guys, they actually have products. They're selling products, and they're undercutting everyone. Because before we started the podcast here, we're looking at just pricing. So the VF8 in the US, you can get the VF8 for how much was it again? Like 40K? I think it was about 40K.
41?
Yeah, 41. Where the equivalent, kind of equivalent, Volkswagen ID4 was 50. VF9 is the 6 or 7 passenger, so like a 3-row, and that's 56 US. And there really isn't a 6-7 passenger EV that's on the market, like other than the Model X, which is $100,000. So if you're just looking at numbers, it's not bad, but would you trust it?
I don't see the point. That's my dilemma. I don't know if... I just feel like there's enough alternative brands out there. And is this really doing something that's disrupting the market, you know, in a meaningful way?
It's just pricing.
And that's new car pricing, right? Like, the thing is, if, say, these cars are unreliable or they're poorly serviced, and, like, used car pricing is going to plummet. And if you can't compete long-term, then there's really no point.
Yeah.
And I feel like we've seen this before with, not necessarily with EVs, but just, you can't just Daewoo your way into a market, right? Like, just being cheaper is not going to make people care about you and the products you have to offer, right? I mean Daewoo is still strong
I like how you mentioned Daewoo, because I remember when the Daewoo came out in North America, I was like, the styling on the Daewoos were pretty nice.
Yeah, so something unique, like there was something different about them. Actually, their dealership is right around the corner from where I am, on Canby there. I remember, but now it's like a drug dealer dealership, like a gangster dealership. Everyone knows it. I don't know what it is. But yeah, no, just being cheap is not good enough, because I think some people might fall for it, right? Like that, okay, I'm getting this kind of range, this kind of power for this much money. It makes sense. But I think a lot of people, and the reason why Toyota is always going to be number one is not because none of their products are that compelling visually, quality, like material quality-wise, performance-wise, anything. But you buy it for the dependability, you buy it for the
resale
reputation, and that ultimately translates to better resale. Is if I'm paying, like, for a Camry versus an Altima, if I'm paying $2,000 more for a Camry, I know I'm getting my money back in the end. Mm-hmm. And I know some people don't think like that, but it's... that's how I see it, is that I think this is going to catch a lot of short-sighted people and get their money, but and it looks trash. I'm just going to put it out there. It's ugly. Yeah.
Okay, so they have two cars, the VF8 and the VF9. The VF8, I don't mind that much.
It looks
much.
Okay.
I think the VF8 looks pretty okay. Has a Lincoln Nautilus MKX.
It's got Ford an Edge. Eastern European vibe to me.
Yeah.
Like something that, like, I don't know, Lada, or what's that company that makes Dacia? Dacia is what it looks like.
Is it Dacia or Dacia?
I don't know. James May said, good news, the Dacia Sandero. It looks like a Dacia, like something that they could make.
Yeah.
Or a Skoda, like the reworked VW Skoda look.
The VF8, I don't mind. The 9, though, that looks... you know what it looks like? It looks like a Palisade, but
ugly. It's ugly. With an ugly stick.
Like, yeah. It's the hood is higher than the Palisade, but the roofline, it's lower. So it looks more stretched out, but like the belt line is high.
It's so, very like, high.
If you look at where the windows are, it's right at the headrests.
Yeah, I think visually it's because the batteries are low, so then they everything is raised up. But yeah, I know what you mean. The rear seat occupants are going to be car sick.
Yeah. Because, like, yeah, the head, okay. If you look from the inside out, it's literally your head is at the windowsill. That's insane. I don't think I've seen a car like that before. Like, I mean, sports cars, yes, but not on an SUV. That's way too high.
Dang, submarine in there, basically.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know. Who knows? I could be wrong about this car or this company, but that is my opinion, that they don't even look that great. They don't stand out to me in any meaningful way. That you got to do better than just be cheaper than someone else, because where am I going to get the service, right? Like, how if I wanted something affordable, Toyota, Hyundai, VW, Ford, everyone's got affordable products on the way, if not already on the market,
right?
I don't know. This reminds me a little bit of Hyundai in the 90s and Daewoo that I already mentioned. And it's just, you can't just be cheap. Like Saturn, on the other hand, which also flopped. Saturn made some kind of compelling products to me.
Well, it was compelling to us because we know that the sporty side of it worked well. Actually, no, we were
the regular Saturn. Like,
just like I just remember we were looking at a Saturn, like,
yeah, we're looking at, I don't even know what they're called, but like the big wagons that, like, there's no one else that in GM was making a compact but massive wagon, like, and they don't rust because they're all plastic. And
many positives.
Yeah, there's great, and they're cheaper than the mainline GM brands. Like, I thought that was a real win, and but obviously not enough to keep around.
No,
you know, GM kept Buick around, and Buick works in China, but not so much here.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
Let's move on to something that we're super excited for.
Yeah, everyone's waiting for.
Yeah, let's get into it. The 2023 Toyota GR Corolla, or the Corolla, as I like to call it.
The Grafor
also works. So, all right, let me break down the specs here first. Engine, a G16E. It's a 1.6 liter, three-cylinder, 300 horsepower at 6,500 RPM, 273 pound-feet between 3,000 and 5,500. Six-speed manual only. It's a GR4 all-wheel drive system with customizable front to rear bias settings. There's 60-40 if you want to play it safe, 50-50 when it starts snowing, 30-70 when you want to go sideways a little bit. There are two trims. There's core and launch. Core and circuit edition. The circuit edition is a launch year exclusive, so it's only available in 2023. The core will come later this year in white, black, or the supersonic red. The circuit edition will be limited in 2023, coming in white, red, as well as a heavy metal. Heavy metal looks to be this kind of matte gray.
It's like the color to get. Like, it is very special.
It is definitely very special.
It's very of the moment, very a la mode, and it is what everyone is doing in late 2010s and early 2020s.
It definitely fits like the current vibe. Circuit edition adds a few things. You get the forged carbon roof, you get the vented bulge hood, and you get that massive rear spoiler on the back. You get suede trim sport seat with red accents, front and rear LSD, a shift knob that's different. I think it's a side shift knob from Marinzo. And that's really it. No pricing information. We don't know exactly that. But if you're going to go with this, waiting for that circuit edition would be huge. But I'm worried that people are going to sit on a circuit edition. They're not going to drive it.
It's just going to collect dust. And I, well, okay, here's the thing. We don't know how this car reviews. And I think that is going to make or break it. It doesn't have the same charm as the GRRs. The GRRs being a homologation special is just so cool that you have to love it. I don't even care. And even then, people were like, it doesn't even drive that great because it's the wheelbase is too short. You know, it's just not going to have like the best balance. This car does not get the benefit of being that cool because just by nature of being a homologation special. This car is based off of an outgoing model, basically. You know, this is a 2023 model year. The Corolla hatch has been around since 2018. We're already 5 years into it, and the interior doesn't lie. It from day one, it was only okay as an interior, but we're still seeing the same cheap interior that's very plain and not fitting of a $50,000, possibly more, vehicle.
There has been a few updates on the interior, but not in...
The cluster is cool.
The cluster is updated. You get a different steering wheel. You get updated seats. You get a better infotainment. That's the same one that's found in newer Toyota and Lexus products. And you get a manual handbrake.
Nice. Yeah. But yeah, to me, this like look at the rear bumper. The triple exhaust, it sucks. It just sucks. That picture is not the worst. They have a picture of the red one. They have a picture of the red one, and it just looks like they couldn't decide. Core 05 left.
That one. Yeah.
Just look at that. Like, yeah. That exhaust is not a good look.
I'm not a big fan of it. I feel like
they will take pictures of it with different angles, add some filters and effects, but this, they have a picture of it just like in a studio, straight on with good lighting, and it just looks trash. Like, none of the tips look good, and they're not even arranged in an aesthetically pleasing manner.
Yeah, I'm just taking a picture of taking a look at the GR Yaris, and the GR Yaris has dual exhaust on the side, and I think that's perfectly fine.
Yeah,
where does this middle exhaust come from?
I thought we were gonna get the quad trapezoid exhaust. That's what the rumors were saying, right? And
yeah,
we got this ugly monstrosity that makes no sense from a performance standpoint, makes no sense from a packaging standpoint. And it doesn't even look good.
And
this is my fear with Toyota as a company. That's why they haven't been that great with their enthusiast cars. And this is like, it's got potential to not be as hyped because, okay, everyone is hyping this car up. I have so many group chats that I'm in. Everyone's like, I'm going crazy for it. Every dealership's got so many people putting deposits down, even though they probably won't even get it. They don't know what production is like. And I'm just here like, just want to give this car a bit of a reality check. We don't know how good it is yet. The Yaris is cool, but it's not the driver's car to end all driver's cars. And this is based off of an old chassis that, again, was nothing exceptional. And it's an old style that, you know, the thing you have to keep in mind, the Golf R is fresh, right? Like the Mark 8 is a fresh chassis. The Civic Type R, we're getting a new one very soon. Actually, same model year, 2023 model year, we'll have a new Type R anyways. And that's going to be so far ahead of this. So it's just, I don't know.
I think they're hitting like a lot of people's kind of, like, I'm sure you remember the Celica All-Track. Mm-hmm. A lot of people love that thing, right? Because it was like the rally special. Toyota does do, like, they are in rally, but they are in it with the Yaris. That's why the homologation Yaris, GR Yaris exists.
That's why it's so cool.
Because it's part of that. They did have a Corolla WRC car, but that was in the 90s. It's not now. This car, like, I like it. I really do. As an enthusiast, I'm happy to see that they have a 6-speed, 3-pot, like turbocharged, all-wheel drive kind of monster hot hatch that they're bringing to the table. I think that's absolutely cool. But to your point, there are better options for a vehicle that's just better overall. The Golf R is priced very well at like $46,000. The Type R, it's going to be more mature than the last one, because we know that. And the current Civic is really nice on the inside.
Yeah, and like there's other cars out there that I think, and I hate this, I think a lot of people want to buy these cars because they speculate that in 20 years when there's no more internal combustion engines, this kind of car is going to stand out. And it's going to be worth so much money. It's like, it's one of those, the dumbest investments you could make, but dumb people are out there. Like we talked about earlier. But the thing is, like the Elantra N, don't sleep on that car, right? Like that, it's stupid fast. The reviews are great. It supposedly drives pretty nice. You know, I've driven the Veloster N a decent amount and it's really nice. And that car is going to undercut this significantly. Doesn't have all-wheel drive, but as far as like just being fun to drive, and it's way nicer of a car. Like the Corolla does not hold a candle to the Elantra. If we're talking as far as commuter cars go, the Corolla is way at the bottom. Like that's the thing, is the Corolla to me is the worst in class, and this is just built on that platform.
It's like, okay, don't think that we absolutely hate this car, because we don't.
No,
you know, I think there's definitely,
I think it's place. Cool. I still want it. I don't not want it, but I'm just being realistic here.
Yeah, like if you're gonna buy a car for speculating about 45, maybe 50k, there are just better options. I think, you know, that's really what we're trying to get to.
I think a lot of people need to remember the Focus RS.
Well, the Focus RS was 50K when it came out, and then it jumped to 67.
Even at 50, price, money, no object. We have to remember how hyped up the Focus RS was. But guess what? It overheats, the brakes suck, and it rides terrible.
Yes.
And then it became overpriced. The overpriced part was after the fact. But they, you know, we saw some fun cars. We saw the Fiesta SE, we saw the Focus SE. You know, okay, these are kind of nice. And then they're like, we're gonna bring the big daddy over. We see you like them. We're gonna give you a big daddy model Focus RS. And it completely flopped. But the excitement that the Focus RS had behind it was very much what I'm seeing now with the GR Corolla. It's this, let's not care how it reviews. Let's not care. I don't know. I just know Toyota's chassis handling tuning is garbage. Like, I don't know if there's any segment where they don't handle the worst in class. I'm talking about minivans, SUVs, compact cars, mid-sized cars. They all handle trash. And I love Toyota.
They probably have the best plug-in hybrid sport utility vehicle.
Because they have the only one.
Well, it's the Outlander and the Tucson. Actually, the Tucson's pretty good. The
Tucson is way better. I drove the Tucson PHEV. It's way better than a RAV4. And I own a RAV4.
Like, RAV4's faster.
RAV4 may be faster, but the Tucson is more refined. It's more comfortable and it handles better. Like, there's like Toyota's chassis division is really crap. Like, Lexus, actually not bad. Lexus does some better things, but if it's got a Toyota badge on it, and even the Supra, even the GR Supra is out of the box is hot garbage.
Really?
Yeah, and it's a good platform.
Well, it's all Toyotas are hot garbage or just not that great. What about the GR86?
That's a Subaru. they you know what? They messed up the ride on that too. It rides way too harsh for what it is.
Well, that's even the previous one was harsh.
The new one is worse. The new one is worse. But GR86 is very much an exception because it is very much a Subaru. And it's very much a carryover. From an already proven platform. But, you know, and like the Ford thing is, it's just, I'm getting flashbacks and not in a good way of the Focus RS.
Well, it's actually very funny that you're bringing up Focus RS. So I was actually curious how much they are used these days. Focus RS it's as low as 42, but as high as 56 for a newer one with lower mileage. So 42 to 56 is kind of where Focus RS was. And that was 50,000 new to 67,000. But then I took a look at Type R, because let's be honest, a Type R is a very similar vehicle. The cheapest Type R you can get right now on the market at 2018, it's at 46,000. That's 80,000 on it. So like in 2018, a Civic Type R was 41K.
Yeah.
Right? Like
if you still have a 2018, you basically had a free car.
Yeah, you made money on your car.
And the difference is, I think the Type R, when it came out, did not have this kind of hype. Why? Because it's front wheel drive.
Yeah.
And then all the reviews came out. Like, oh, it drives amazing. The steering is amazing. The brakes are amazing. Best front wheel drive car ever.
Revo Knuckle? What is this?
Yeah. And like, impossible to change front suspension. Like, it's so much work to do. But it's a flawed car in many ways. And on paper, it was terrible. People were like, why would I buy this 300 horsepower front wheel drive car for, say, 45, when I can get a Golf R and destroy it all day in a straight line? And yeah, a Golf R will destroy it all day in a straight line, but it doesn't have that magic. And that is the timeless quality of the Type R. The Type R didn't get overhyped to begin with, I want to say. I don't think that many people jumped on in 2018 that, like,
a 2017 Golf R, it's only 31,000.
Yeah, I'm curious. Like, I'm really curious to see how people will compare this and the Type R, the GR Corolla versus the Type R.
Yeah,
because, and I mean the outgoing, the FKA Type R, because I don't think you can beat that car. I don't care if it's front wheel drive, rear wheel drive, whatever, all wheel drive. The steering feel, the brake feel, the shifter feel, everything about that car is perfect. The suspension is perfect. It is out of the box. It is one of the best suspension you can get. It rides great. It handles great. What more can you say? Like, I cannot praise that car highly enough, which is why I'm selling it. But like, the deal breaker for me is ultimately the sound, but that is really like subjective. Some people don't mind it, some people put an exhaust on it, but to me it's just an amazing car, and that car like deserves to hold its value, and it deserves all the praise of, you know, what the Type R stands for. The GR Corolla, I don't know. I'm holding my breath on this one because I don't want to buy into the hype and then it's be super a disappointment. Yeah.
No, I'm totally with you there. I I'm excited. I want to drive it, but I don't want to drive it back to back with a Type R. I don't, because I don't want to make that comparison. Mainly the reason is, like, I know how good that Type R is. I don't want to feel like this doesn't live up to that. I don't want to have that knowledge. I want to just be blind and be like, this is a good car.
It's got to have its own character. It's going to sound better in the Type R. That alone, like, the exhaust is going to have a lot more character to it.
Well,
Type R is just buzzy. And
in, like, the press release, they did say that there is valving in the exhaust. Yeah. So
we know what the GR Yaris sounds like, and it sounds like a little rally car, which is really cool.
Yeah.
That is going to be part of the appeal for me with the GR Corolla. I like the size. It's very small. Like the Corolla hatch that it's based on is.
Don't like the size. I'm actually going to go the other side with you on that.
Oh.
Okay. I always found the Corolla too small.
It is too small. But as a daily driver, like, people ask me, should I get that car? I'm like, no, because it's got a way crappier interior and interior space compared to the Civic hatch and the Mazda 3 hatch. The Corolla is, yet again, worse in class, because that is what Toyota is known for.
Yeah.
If you're evaluating Toyotas from an objective standpoint, they are generally going to be below average.
Yeah.
From a just purely objective, like, new car impression review.
I know for a fact this GR Corolla cannot fit my son.
Yeah, the door shape is just, like, the headroom.
I cannot get that front seat far enough.
Even if you could get him in, you have nowhere to put a stroller.
Like, yeah, it's
trunk is horrendous.
Oh, I'm sure this trunk is going to be worse than the regular Corolla, because of the all-wheel drive. Yeah, it's going to be worse. But
yeah. Like, that is one of the things that make the Golf R great, right? Like, I think the Mark 7R is one of those classics as well that people are sleeping on, because it is, well, they're a little bit overpriced right now because everything is. But the Mark 7R is just so, it's small. It parks better than the Civic hatchback, I would say. It's better packaging than the Civic Type R. So that's why I still respect the Golf R for what it is. But the Corolla hatch, like, again, they're basing this on one of the worst in its class. It's the oldest, it's the crappiest interior, it's the crappiest interior volume. It is
I know we're off topic on this. Did you see that local Golf R used for sale? 70K?
Nani?
Yeah. 70,000 Canadian dollars.
Mark 8. Wonder if it's my friend. My friend is trying to get a GT4.
No, it's at a dealer.
Oh, which one?
Maple Ridge.
Ah, Chrysler?
Doesn't say Chrysler. So it has a Volkswagen blocks on it.
Oh.
Maple Ridge Volkswagen, sorry.
66,988.
Oh, you found a cheaper one. The one that I'm looking at is 69,000.
Oh.
Yeah. So 70K.
No, don't overpay for a Golf. So, yeah, the Golf R. See, the Golf R people have realistic expectations about, and I don't think you can hype it up to 70K. Like, it just, I think it's
Golf R with the automatic. I think this has a sunroof as well. I think that's 52, 53. Brand new.
Hmm.
But it's a Volkswagen, and the Volkswagens right now, I went to a Volkswagen dealership. I was curious what the wait time on the ID4 and ID Buzz would be, and if they'll take a deposit for the ID Buzz. Yes, I went into a Volkswagen dealership. I wanted to give them money for an ID Buzz, and they told me no. ID4 right now, wait time is estimated 36 months.
Sheesh.
Yeah. 3 years.
Good on them. Good on them. I don't know.
It's... No, it's not the wait time issue. It's chip shortage, which we know. But it's also the war that's going on over there.
True.
Because their vehicles are manufactured in Germany.
Germany's
heavily affected. And because of that, it went from 1 year. Now they're estimating 36.
That big of a jump over this war.
Yeah. 36 months. And then the ID Buzz, supposedly we were going to get it next year, in late 2023. He was like, you'll be lucky to see it by 2026.
2026?
Yeah.
Man, that's brutal. Going back on topic, the GR Corolla, like asking friends in the industry at Toyota salespeople, and they're like, we may get one a year, we may get two a year. So there's really, it's really up in the air. That is going to translate to something down the road, which is really exciting for some people, which is that this is going to be super, super low volume car, and anything, any kind of special model, I guess, in this time frame, you know, from 2020 mid 2021 to, I don't know, at least 2024, is gonna have that going for it. If it was only made during these, I don't know, chip shortage, supply shortage months and years, then yeah, it's gonna be rare, and that's always going to be a good thing 20 years down the road when you're trying to sell it, if you hold your cars on for that long. But I don't know, this is probably the last like internal combustion pure gasoline GR Corolla you'll ever get. I hate saying that. Just it grinds my gears, because that's like literally like every Porsche car. This is the last naturally aspirated. This is the last hydraulic steering. This is the last 6-speed manual. This is the last 7-speed manual. Like, I'm just like, I'm done with it. Like, everyone is so obsessed with resale value these days.
Yeah.
That it's so hard to find real car enthusiasts that just want to drive and honestly don't care, like
just
go out and enjoy yourself.
Yeah,
don't just buy whatever, just don't buy whatever you think is going to be worthwhile. I think the GR Corolla is unfortunately of that group.
I'm sure it is, especially the circuit edition. Mm-hmm. Especially that special edition that they got. But yeah, I think that's really it for this week. Thank you everyone for listening and tuning in and all that good stuff. And we will see you, or, well, have you listen to us, I guess, next week. Take care, everyone.